Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, evidence of lakes on Jupiter's moon Europa, an Earth-like planet 600 light-years away, and sky-watching the Geminid meteor showers. Here's a scientist soundbite.
It's kind of a quest to, you know, Lewis and Clark the solar system, if you will. You know, try to understand our place in the solar system, where we are as people, where we're going, how we got here, and whether we're alone. And think big and think big questions and think about things greater than ourselves. I think anybody who is interested in Europa wants one day for us to go back and land and really try to answer, you know, is life there? What's down there?
That's planetary scientist Brittany Schmidt of UT Austin. More with her later, but first, science news of the week with Emily Howard and Michael Brennan.
A team of researchers has discovered what they say is the first super-Earth orbiting in the habitable zone of a star similar to our sun. They call this distant planet Kepler-22b. It's 600 light-years away. According to researchers, Kepler-22b could be a large, rocky planet with a surface temperature like that of a comfortable spring day here on Earth. We have an interview with astronomer Alan Boss about Kepler-22b later in the program.
For the first time, a study found changes in young men's brains after 1 week of playing violent video games. The changes were in the parts of the brain associated with cognitive function and emotional control. Researchers from the Indiana University School of Medicine presented these study results at the annual meeting of the Radiological Society of North America in late November.
A survey of scientists from around the world, published in late November in the journal Nature, suggests that thawing permafrost is releasing greenhouse gases faster and at higher levels than previously thought. Permafrost is ground that stays frozen year-round. It covers about one-fifth of Earth. According to these scientists, as Earth's permafrost thaws, it'll release about the same amount of carbon as deforestation. But thawing permafrost also releases methane, an even more powerful greenhouse gas.
Telescopes employed in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, or SETI, are once again searching planetary systems for signals from other life forms. SETI's Allen Telescope Array was placed in hibernation mode last April as a result of budgetary shortfalls. Public funding and U.S. Air Force funding made the restart of the SETI program possible. Among the first targets are some of the planets orbiting distant suns recently discovered by NASA's Kepler Space Telescope. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. We've got some great science interviews coming up. But first, this week's Song of the Week, How It Is by The Story Of.
Here we are in a troubled winter time. It's been
go with someone.
and to provide. 'Cause if it's good, then it's just enough to remind me what I'm holding up.
Scientists have discovered the strongest evidence yet of liquid water on another world in the form of underground lakes as big as the Great Lakes on Earth, below the surface, though, of Jupiter's moon Europa. Brittany Schmidt is a planetary scientist in the Jackson School of Geosciences at the University of Texas, Austin. She led a study that found lumpy, cracked areas called chaos terrains on the icy moon of Europa, which indicate the presence of pools of water trapped in extraterrestrial ice. Brittany Schmidt joins us now in the studio to explain the findings. Dr. Schmidt, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So tell us, what are the main findings of the study you've led and published in Nature that's found evidence of liquid water on Jupiter's moon Europa?
The main result of the paper is that Europa's ice shell, it's a thick ice shell covering a global ocean, possesses these large liquid water bodies, much like lakes, but perched inside the ice shell. And why that's exciting to scientists is that it indicates that Europa is still active today and that its ice shell is overturning rather rapidly, involving a great deal more liquid water than originally supposed. And that's an exciting result because of the implications it has for Europa's ocean and possibly even these lakes being habitable.
Now, what do you mean by Europa being active? What's going on there?
Well, Europa, for a long time, we've known, has a thick ice shell, tens of kilometers thick, overlaying a global ocean, and has a deep interior that's much like the Earth's, that's rocky, probably with an iron core. And we think that there's maybe internal activity that is given to the planet essentially from its tidal interactions with Jupiter. As Europa orbits around Jupiter, it's tugged and pulled, flexes, and it gives it frictional heating and heats up the interior. That heat has to get out some way, and so the ice shell convects, actually, much like the mantle of the Earth does. Cold material sinks, warm material goes up. So what's interesting about this perspective is that this material that's warm from the inside is actively making its way up to the surface. And when it reaches the very cold outer edges of Europa's ice shell, just a few kilometers of brittle, impure ice, it's causing melting. The images that we analyzed are from the Galileo spacecraft, and it flew in the Jupiter system in the late 90s and early 2000s. And this spacecraft had lots of images, but we weren't really sure if Europa was doing anything at the time. And this paper, using those images, builds the case that Europa, in fact, was changing actively right before our eyes in a way that we weren't able to understand at the time and now can. So it's basically saying that much like the Earth, Europa's overturning, and it's got these geologic processes that are continuing to have the surface evolve, which is exciting in terms of the habitability perspective.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the evidence and maybe a little bit of a background on this. Tell us a little bit about how scientists know that there are lakes beneath the surface trapped in the ice, and a little bit about what's gone into that understanding.
Really, the story of finding these lakes is the story of using perspective from our own backyard, basically. When I came to the University of Texas, I came here to join a group that does terrestrial cryosphere work, basically studying Antarctica and the Arctic, trying to understand how ice interacts with rock there, and also how ice interacts with water. And that perspective is what gave us the tools to use to reanalyze this Galileo data and see something new in it. And so really the evidence boils down to height. Topography is a really important tool to understanding how planets work. Mountains on the Earth tell us that the Earth has been, you know, has had plates sliding around. Erosion and the shapes of those features tells us the history of water and the history of how the surface is changing. And in the same way, when you look at ice, both on the Earth and now on Europa, you can use that topography to tell you something about how the ice shell works and how that place works. So the real evidence for the lakes is the fact that at one location, one of these chaos terrains, it's called Terra Macula, the surface is depressed in a large circular area. And that circular area is about around 100 by 100 kilometers, so relatively large, about the size of, I think it's like Lake Ontario. But the surface is dropped down by about 400 to 600 meters in this whole area, and the big icebergs have kind of cracked up, and they're floating along higher than that lowest point. And what that tells us is that the material below this feature on the surface is still liquid. So there's a giant lake. And if you use how much the surface is depressed as an indicator of about how much water is below that, then you get an answer that's, you know, a lake that's 3 to 4 kilometers deep, which is, in fact, the depth of the Earth's oceans. So inside this ice shell, we've got this evidence for trapped liquid water bodies. And it's basically because the icebergs are floating. The surface is depressed down, which tells us that it melted. And then the icebergs are floating, which tells us that it's floating on water.
That's amazing. So we're talking about Great Lakes trapped in the ice shell of Jupiter's moon Europa.
Correct.
Give us your take. What do these findings of liquid water, these liquid water lakes on Jupiter's moon Europa, what do these findings mean for the search for life beyond Earth?
Yeah, I'm really excited about those implications. And really what it says is that there's another place in the solar system that's active right now and that's maybe filling its oceans with the ingredients you need for life. And from the perspective of this paper, what we're saying is that the ice shell is overturning actively. And so if the ice shell is overturning, I mentioned that all of this material is raining down on the outside of Europa, you know, that now oxidant-rich ice, it can now be pulled down into the ocean. And so what it's doing is it's basically like a highway bringing, you know, food for the ocean down through the ice shell.
I'm sure people have asked you this, but I mean, what do you think life might look like in these lakes on Jupiter's moon Europa? Are we talking about fish or what are we talking about?
Well, we don't, you know, this idea of lakes is so new that hasn't really been teased out exactly. What we do know about life in ice on the Earth is that microbial, you know, very small life is happy to live inside the ice. It lives on grain boundaries. It lives in small brine pockets. You know, it probably lives in in the subglacial lakes in Antarctica. We may soon find out as they tap into Vostok. There's life that exists in subglacial lakes in Iceland that's been seen. So, but those are all small. What I think is even more interesting to me is the potential that if this active recycling of Europa has been going on since the beginning of the solar system, then that may in fact bring enough energy down for more complex life.
You've been listening to planetary scientist Brittany Schmidt. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Join our community for science. Find us as EarthSky on Facebook, EarthSky Science on Twitter, and at EarthSky.org. Deborah Bird joins us now with news of the global night sky, a meteor shower to watch for. Hi, Deborah.
Hey, Jorge. This is the Geminid meteor shower. It's one of the year's major meteor showers. It happens every year around this time. And this year, unfortunately, the moon is going to be just a couple of days past full when the shower happens. The shower should be peaking on the nights of December 13th and 14th, but there will be a bright moon in the sky for a lot of that time.
So are there any tips for people listening on finding meteors despite the full moon?
Yeah, in fact, there are. We hear from so many people nowadays who see meteors in bright moonlight and really enjoy them. You know, it's been like an old amateur astronomy thing that you don't watch meteor showers in the light of the moon. But in fact, you know, people see meteors in the light of the moon all the time, and they love them. So if you're outside on the nights of December 13th and 14th, of course, after midnight is typically best, and you want to look up, you might see some meteors on those nights. And of course, you can also try to minimize moonlight by going out into the country. You can minimize it by sitting in the shade of something. Like if you're in the shade of a tall tree and you've got the moon blocked, you're going to see more meteors than if you're standing right out under the direct moonlight. So that's another tip that you can try to watch the Geminid meteor shower.
And the moonlight might help people set up their easy chairs in their backyards or out in the country, like you're saying, to be able to find these meteors, the Geminid meteor shower.
Well, you know, it's, you know, if you don't see any meteors, you can enjoy the moonlight.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. And we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. We invite you to join our community for science. Find us as Earth Sky on Facebook, Earth Sky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. NASA's Kepler mission has discovered the first planet orbiting in the habitable zone of a star similar to the Sun. The new planet is 600 light-years away and called Kepler-22b. On the line to talk about it now is astronomer Alan Boss of the Carnegie Institution of Science. He's on the team of researchers that discovered Kepler-22b. Now, what are the main findings announced by NASA today of a planet called Kepler-22b that was discovered by the Kepler Space Telescope?
Kepler-22b is the very first example discovered by any means of a planet with roughly a few times the size of Earth orbiting in what's called the habitable zone around a Sun-like star. That is a star very much like our Sun, as opposed to, say, much lower mass star, so-called red dwarfs, where such planets have been seen before. So today we have the first time that we have something much closer to a true Earth analog, that is a planet orbiting with a period of roughly 1 year around a Sun-like star. It's a bit bigger than the Earth. It's about perhaps two and a half times as large as our Earth is, so it's probably also quite a bit more massive. But there's a good chance that it may be a rocky world, so-called super-Earth, and it certainly is orbiting at the right distance so that it could have liquid water on its surface if it does indeed have a watery composition.
Tell us a little bit about this planet, Kepler-22b. Is it Earth-like? Is it not Earth-like? What do scientists know about it?
What we primarily know about it is that it has a radius of roughly, 2.4 times the radius of the Earth. So it's quite a bit larger. And for the typical densities that we know for other super-Earths where we have been able to measure their masses, it's most likely you're going to have something like a mass of maybe 10 or 15 Earth masses, something in that range. And that means it most likely has a good chance of having at least a rocky core, perhaps surrounded by some water. But it's probably not a pure water planet. It's probably not a pure rock planet either. It's probably some mixture of rock and water both, which makes it very intriguing because it probably does have some water, which would be liquid on its surface, since it's really in a rather moderate temperature regime. It's basically the surface temperature. It's pretty much like a spring day on Earth, roughly 72 degrees Fahrenheit, which sounds wonderful for those of us who are often rather frozen this time of the year.
This sounds incredible. I mean, to tell us a little bit about the evidence, how do scientists know that there could possibly be a planet out there that is a lot like Earth?
Well, the NASA Kepler mission was launched back in March of 2009. It's been in operation now for 1,000 days, staring at one field of stars towards the constellations Lyra and Cygnus, looking at roughly 155,000 stars or so, looking to see when one of them blinks. And one of them blinks, if it blinks again and again and again, if you can periodically watch it blinking regularly, and if you can rule out any other reason for why the star might be blinking, you are forced to conclude that it has a planet in orbit around it, and the planet's orbit is aligned so that the planet passes in front of the star and makes it blink periodically. And those very tall, small changes can only be measured in orbit. You can't do that from a ground-based observatory. So you have to go to space, and that's why NASA launched the Kepler mission a couple of years ago. And Kepler is now showing that it's able to detect rather small planets, and including planets out at distances that puts them in the habitable zone. We're at the right distance from the star to have liquid water be a possibility on its surface.
You've been listening to astronomer Alan Boss, who spoke by phone from the first Kepler Science Conference at NASA's Ames Research Center. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors, Mellow Grand, The Black and White Years, 100 Flowers, The Story of, Mother Falcon, Sleep Good, and Akote Soul Sounds. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next stage. There are so many artists, too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next stage.